My name is Sarah Lavender, and I am interviewing Carolyn Jones for the Oral History Project, Hurt Park Neighborhood. Ms. Jones, would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Carolyn Ann Johnson Jones.
All right. I have a few questions for you, Ms. Jones. When and where were you born?
I was born in Roanoke, Virginia, September 8, 1949.
How long have you lived in Roanoke, and what streets and neighborhoods have you lived on?
I've lived in Roanoke my entire life. I've never moved away to live in another city or town or state. I grew up the first 6.5 years of my life on Salem Avenue in Southwest. At the age of between 6.5, 7-ish, my grandmother remarried, and we moved to 13th Street Southwest. I lived there until I married in 1970 and moved to Northwest City in Roanoke.
Tell me about your parents, your brothers and sisters. Do you have an extended family living nearby?
I grew up with my adoptive grandmother. She raised me. Took me in at the age of around 60. She raised me. She took my sister in 4 years later, and we lived together there until my sister was 9 and I was 14. My mother then married and someone in the service, and my sister then went to live with my mother, and leaving just me and my grandmother. My sister traveled with my mother and my new stepfather. They later had two other children, my sister Angela and my brother Mark.
Describe your house for us. What is it like? Is it brick? Does it have a garden? Yes, the house that you grew up.
Well, the first house I grew up in was on Salem Avenue in Southwest. And it was really just a three-room house. The first room you got into when you walked in the door was the living room. And the next room we had was considered the bedroom. And the last room was considered the kitchen. And on the back porch, we had a bathroom. And you could go in that little room on the back there on the porch, and you snapped a little door and was outside on the back porch. And I remember the seat to the bathroom, the seat to the toilet flushed itself, and you had to hold it down, and I was tiny, and I always had difficulty holding it down to get on it, and then I felt like it was going to flop me right off, you know, before I could get off. And then in the living room, we also had a bed for when extra people would come to visit, other family members from out of town would come to visit. And the bedroom, we had lots of beds because there was my sister, me, and I think we had another little small tiny bed in there. In the kitchen, we had one of those old-fashioned wood cook stoves. The smoke went up the chimney and outside, and my grandmother was a really, really good cook, and she cooked a lot in there. It was always warm. On Saturdays, we'd bathe a lot in a tin tub, and she'd warm up water on the cook stove and then pour it into the tin tub, and we'd get in and take a Saturday night bath. And between there, we just kind of washed up in pails and pans, you know, like those long tub pans. And we also had a potbelly stove in the living room to keep our house warm. We had coal and wood stoves to warm with.
Very nice.
No air conditioning, just fans occasionally in the summertime.
Wow. For the house you lived in next on, I think you said 13th Street, what kind of house was that like?
Well, it was so much better because the house on Salem was right there on the Salem Avenue Highway. Like, lots of traffic. We had the house next door to me had a filling station, we called it back then, right next door to it. So there were lots of cars coming in and out to be repaired, cars coming in and out to get gasoline. And next door to me was an empty lot on the other side, and a big house next to it, and right next door to that was a big hotel. It was a hotel that was known for lots of people going in and out, different hours of the night. And my grandmother kept us inside a lot. She wouldn't let us out much to play because she was worried about, you know, people moving to and fro, the gasoline, people coming in to get gas, the traffic. It was dangerous, really. So we had a little small fence around our house, and we weren't allowed too much out. When we moved to 13th Street, it was a lot different. We had a big fenced-in backyard. It was nice. And it was a small house. Also, we lived on a hill. We could ride our bikes, and we had to be careful not to ride too fast because it was a steep hill, a steep slope. I remember my sister got her tricycle into a wreck. As soon as we got there, she wrecked going down the hill riding her trike too fast. But our living room there, we had a front yard with some shade trees, and we had a big front porch at that house, too. We loved sitting on the front porch, especially in the summertime. And then we had the living room, and we had the two bedrooms, which was nice. My sister and I shared a bedroom with a big brass bed, and she had a dresser and I had a dresser. And then my grandmother had a bedroom of her own, and then we had a nice little kitchen on the back and a little small closed-in back porch that we sit out there too also sometimes and eat on our little small back porch. And underneath that back porch, we used to have our playhouse. It was really like a crawl space, a tall crawl space. And we played doctor, teacher, and nurse under there. Even in the winter, we'd sneak out there and make and play house. And we make mud pies in the summertime under there and serve the neighborhood children. We played school, church, and we played teacher. And we loved all those things. And we had a huge backyard with blackberries growing and raspberries growing in it. And my grandmother threw some peaches out there. She threw some peach seeds out there, and we prayed they grow, and they grew into two beautiful peach trees, and we ate peaches and plums. We had damsons and plums, and my grandmother canned, and we had lots of pickles and canned fruits from those trees, and lots of foods and things, because she was from the country, and they would bring in things from the country from her family at both those houses, and we'd always have canned goods. And I wrote stories about these things.
It sounds like you had a great time with all the, you had a whole fruit thing going on in the backyard.
It was very nice.
So you mentioned some of the activities you participated in. Were there any, structured activities with your church or with the neighborhood that you participated in?
Oh, yes. Can I name the name?
Yeah.
We went to several churches. We went to Jerusalem Baptist Church when I lived on 10th Street and near 10th Street and Salem Avenue. When I lived on Salem Avenue, I went to, it was on Norfolk Avenue, I believe it was. We went to Jerusalem Baptist Church from the time I was a wee little thing. And my grandmother would take us foods in her basket and hide them in there. And we'd sneak and eat them between services and things. And we had church services, and she kept us fed at church so we wouldn't cry. And later, my sister, you know, born 4 years later, she would take us to church, always in church. Then we moved to 13th Street, and she joined a different church. We visited lots of churches on 12 and a half Street. That was a holiness church, I remember. And we visited, several Rose of Sharon. I remember going to that church. It was a holiness church. Jerusalem was a Baptist church. And eventually we went to, on Roy Avenue, to Morningstar Baptist Church, where I joined that church and made it my church home. And I became quickly friends with the secretary of Sunday schools, and I was her helper. And shortly after that, I became a Sunday school teacher. And I began really young, teaching like three, four-year-olds Sunday school every Sunday morning when I was about 12, 13, I started doing that. And I was baptized there at the age of 12. We didn't have a pool at that church. It was an underground church when I first went there. It was all underground. And then we slowly built upstairs, as it is known today. Right now, the church goes through the block. It's so much bigger now. And the church didn't have a pool when I joined the church. And there were about seven of us to join that day. And we were baptized by Noel C. Taylor at the First Baptist, at the High Street Baptist Church on High Street. Over where right now is where the Martin Luther King statue is on the bridge. And the church was High Street Baptist Church over there at the time. Now it's in Northwest Roanoke. That's where we were baptized. They were our sister church. They had a pool and we didn't, and they baptized all of our members.
Very nice. What kind of work did your family do?
The lady that raised me, she had several names. First, her maiden name was Edna Dixon. Her father was Irish and black. This was all she told me. And her mother was some Native American and black. She come from a farming area. Her first husband was a miner. She lived in West Virginia. But the kind of work she did was she had always been used to cleaning houses. As they do it now, they call it cleaning houses. So back in those days, we call it, we had other names. It was sort of like a maid. She had she also worked as a nursemaid. She also babysit other people's children over on Patterson Avenue, on Ferdinand in Southwest.
And she'd get paid.
I would go with her sometimes, and we'd go over there and we'd clean houses, babysit. Get the children to school, to the bus, while the parent worked. We also took in laundry. She was very good at ironing and washing and taught me really young to wash and sew and iron and embroider. And we would take laundry into our house and wash it there on an old Ringer washing machine and hang it out on the line. And then we'd iron what needed ironing and we'd return it to the family. Usually the families were old Southwest, Ferdinand, Patterson, and we return them their laundry and they pay us. And sometimes if we needed things really badly, like if we were low on food, they would be really always right there to help us out, to give us a little extra boost to make it to the next pay period. This was our only living. My grandmother didn't work a job in an office or a factory. I think in her past, she'd worked in a canning factory years ago. But the only work she ever did that I knew of was to help other people. And then later on in life, as they grew older together, they were friends, and they remained friends to the death. They came to her funeral, or she went to theirs. These were the people she worked for. And the people that she worked for, they were always white. But they treated us with respect. And if we needed coal for heating for our house, we had a coal and wood furnace. If we needed coal for our house and was low on money, they would help us out with our bills, sometimes things like that. We became great friends.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you could talk to me about your school life, for instance, where did you attend school? Did you walk to school? Were you ever allowed to stay home from school?
I didn't want to. The first school I attended was Loudoun Elementary School in Northwest Roanoke, because that's where we could go to school. Back in those days, we couldn't go to school near my house. It was segregation. And I went to Loudoun Elementary School on Loudoun Avenue Northwest. It's now a park called Loudoun Avenue Park. I was not allowed to walk to school. It was too far away from my house. But I think one time I sneaked with my friends and walked. Okay, and only once. And then I went from first grade through fifth grade there, and my first and second grade teacher was my grandmother remarried again, and we moved in that house, and it was my grandfather's cousin. I didn't learn this until I was graduating to third grade, but I had found out then that when she found out, you know, who I was related to, and it was by marriage. She was wonderful. I just loved her. I loved all my teachers. I enjoyed being in school. I got good grades, and I liked getting away from home, and because I was on the other side of town, which I hardly ever got to go to. We had one friend over there we used to visit on weekends, sometimes walking. We always walked. We didn't have a car. I never got like a ride to school or car. We rode the bus everywhere we went, or we walked. My grandmother didn't drive. My grandmother couldn't read or write. I taught her how to write her name and sign documents that way. but she never learned to read or write. She grew up on a farming country in Farmville, Virginia area, and she had to work in the fields. They took her out of school at second grade.
So since you went to school, you did a lot of the reading.
I did a lot of the reading and writing for her. Helped her write checks, and she'd sign them, and I taught her how to write her signature. She didn't know how. I read letters. I wrote letters to my mother and read letters from my mother and from her relatives, because she couldn't read at all. I read documents and mail she got in the mail. At a very young age, I started doing this at 8 years of age at least. And I caught the bus at the foot of the hill where I lived, and my cat followed me down there every day and met me when I came back. And I then went to, at sixth grade, I graduated to Harrison, where the Harrison Museum is. I loved it there. My teachers, it was wonderful. From there, I went to Booker T. Booker T. Junior, middle school.
Okay.
Back then, we called it junior high. And I had to ride the bus to all these places. Then I could. Then at that school, I was able to ride the city bus. They allowed us to ride the city bus for 15 cents. And, because back then, I had great times at school, great friends. I didn't have a whole lot of friends. I wasn't most popular. I was quiet, they say. But I'm not now, but I was quiet then. And shy. My life was a lot not known to, it was a quiet life with an elderly parent, grandparent. So I didn't mix in with the others who had young parents who went to parties, things like that. So I stayed home a lot. I went to church, home, school. And I visited friends that I was told that I could visit, that she knew their families only.
How much schooling did you complete?
I completed high school, and I was number 39 in my class. I completed Lucy Addison High School 4 years after my husband. He graduated the year that I began going to high school, so I never met him in school. And then he went on to the military, so I never met him until he got out of the military. During the school year in high school, I enjoyed cosmetology. I wanted to get into hair. I liked playing with my dolls' hair as I was growing up. And I enjoyed playing doctor nurse with my dolls, and I enjoyed playing church, and just being a mom. So those are the things I got interested in. I was good at biology. I got sent away to a biology regional. I didn't do the greatest because I didn't have a lot of chemistry experience, but I did great in the biology department of it. I made straight A's in biology. I loved it. My cosmetology, I learned a lot. I did hair for people at school, and on evenings and weekends, I did hair from my home for friends and family.
Did you get paid for that?
I got paid $2-3 because it's illegal for me to do it without a license. So it was just family and friends, and they would give me tips, like $2-3, $5 tops. And I do hair. And back then, we weren't allowed to cut. I just did we didn't have perms until they just were beginning. Back those days, I did hot combs. I did washes, hot combs. It wasn't a big thing with roller set unless you had a certain kind of hair. My hair could be roller set, but most of my friends couldn't be. And I did a lot of elderly. I grew up with elderly people, so I had a lot of elderly friends, more than I did young. And I did a lot of elderly ladies' hair who were friends of my grandmother. And then I, at school, I also was became interested in art when I was 8 years old. When I moved to the new neighborhood, I met a really good friend, and we became best friends. We were in third grade together. She was large and I was small, and friends, good friends at school called her Fatty, and they called me Bony Skinny. So we became friends because no one, you know, we were kind to each other, and we still remain best friends today. She drew a little bit, and I watched her, and I thought it was wonderful. She came from a huge family, and I stayed at her house a lot. Her big sisters were my big sisters. Her dad was my dad, and her mom just made herself my mom. And I enjoyed their house. I spent the night only probably once at their house. I wasn't allowed to spend the night at others' homes.
How old were you during this time?
During this time, I was like preteen and teenage. We dated each other's hair. and they sneaked and let me wear their clothes. Doing so also at this time, you asked me about walking to school. I was never allowed to walk to school. It was too far away. My grandmother was a really overprotective grandmother. And they would help me. I had other friends in the Hurd Park area that we would meet up with. And occasionally they would come by the bus stop where I caught the bus. And they would say, let's walk. And they said, no one's looking. And I've said at least 6 times I walked to school. Once I walked to school in the snow and slid down the hill behind Burlmore Hospital. We slid down the hill to the road and walked across. It was so much fun because I was raised by elderly people. I wasn't allowed much out. So when I could get to be with young friends, it was a lot of fun. And at church. So that's why I always grew up in church and loved going to school and not missing. I got perfect attendance most of the time. Because it was nice to get out around young people because I was raised by the elderly.
Did either you or any of your family members ever attend college?
I was young. When I finished high school, like I said, I was 39th, and they wanted to give me a scholarship. But my grandmother was real skeptical of things, and she was really eerie of her money, as she had very little most of the time. So what she did was she told them that she was sorry. She would refuse to sign any documents saying that I could go to college on a scholarship or anything like that because they told me I would qualify for a scholarship. And I had several teachers trying to help me get one. During the time of my 12th grade year, some of the conditions that I had lived in were not the greatest, and it was discovered somewhat by accident when they called my grandmother in to talk to her about me going to college. And when they, when she explained to them her beliefs, some of her beliefs, they were perturbed because they felt like, you know, this child deserves this and she's earned this. And they felt like, and she told them, spoke her mind as to what she believed and didn't believe. And then they realized how much I had been not allowed to participate in and the environment of my home. And they said, that I, they felt bad, and they tried their best to talk her into please signing and letting me go to college. And she told them that they made her angry enough to just literally bless them out. So then they realized just how, you know, she felt about things and how her temperament could be, and they felt bad for me. But there was nothing they could do. I was graduating from high school, but they did have a program that I could go to called OIC. And they told all of the students that a couple of days before graduation. And when I graduated from high school, she had wanted me to earn money and bring money home to pay back her for raising me. And I didn't want to work at just a convenience store or a burger joint. I wanted to do like they said I could do. They said I could do great things with my education, with my grades. So I went to OIC. And she had to sign me in, but she refused, and someone helped me sign in. I went there and took some classes, and they discussed some jobs I could go into, some classes. I ended up going to the Burrell Memorial Licensed Practical School of Nursing, free, and they paid all my, everything I needed, down to the watch and the clothes and the books. And I went there, and I was one of 13 graduates that made it through. 44 students signed up. I was one of the 13 who made it.
So you got your nursing degree.
Got my nursing degree, and from there I was able to earn money and not live low income. And about the time I graduated, I met my husband. He had just returned from the Vietnam tour of the Navy in Vietnam.
Well, you've described a little bit of your home life with the way that your grandmother was and having to stay at home and, you know, the back door bathrooms and things like that.
Yeah. Well, we had a bathroom. We had a bathroom at that second house that had feet on it. We had a bathroom with feet, you know, a big tub.
The tub with the coffee.
With the little coffee.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. What did you do usually when you were at home? Did you gather around the radio in the evening? Do you have, you know, like talk on the telephone, read stories?
My grandmother was a great storyteller. She was a very religious woman. My grandmother believed in church and home and friends. She didn't believe in partying. Well, She believed in having partying, but only for the adults, not for any teenagers or children. She had her own form of partying with her friends. I could party with her friends, but not with mine that much. Allowed to do mostly was we were allowed to sit around the radio. Eventually we got a TV. I was allowed to watch TV when I was told I could. I had a curfew on the TV. I was allowed to talk on the telephone only when I was allowed to, and it was very little. I wasn't allowed to have telephone friends. Only on special occasion was I allowed on the phone. I was allowed to work in the kitchen whenever she would let me, and she didn't like you under her feet in the kitchen cooking. She's a great cook, but she didn't want to teach me to cook. It was just, she wanted to, she said it bothered her to have you when she was cooking. But she did teach me to embroider and sew by hand. We were allowed to listen to Christian music only. She let Elvis in because he did some Christian music, so we listened to Elvis. And some, so we got some rock in there. I wasn't allowed to listen to traditional black rhythm and blues rock and roll. I was not allowed to listen to any type of music. Except when I got out of the house and got around friends occasionally, I could hear that. She didn't believe in it. She believed it was would lead to sin. So, and I was allowed to draw when I wanted to draw. I got a sewing machine of my own when I was in nurse's training. I earned it with my student stipend, and I paid my little payments to Bar Brothers Jewelers and got me a little sewing machine, and then I began to sew. Eventually, I made my wedding gown.
Made your own wedding gown?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
When you said that you like to sit out on the porch in the evening, would you talk to other people while you were out there? Just sit and talk with the people?
We talked to the children in the neighborhood. They were allowed to sit close by. Once I had a tea party with a little boy down the street from a foster home. We had a house down the street, the hill for me. Our mother had grown children and a husband. They were raising four foster boys, and one of them was very quiet and shy, and for some reason he came up, and my grandmother said, they began to tease us and say that he was my boyfriend. And so they went in and made tea and brought tea and cookies out. This is a one time occasion, and they said that we were having tea and cookies together. And everyone was shocked because I was shy and he was shy. So they thought that I should have some fun and do that. And we did it on the porch. We had also, my grandmother remarried again. She was widowed three times. The third marriage was a wonderful man. He was a Christian man. I loved him dearly. Her second husband, when we first moved to that house.
This is the house on 13th Street.
The house on 13th Street. He only lived for about 8 months. He was very ill. Shortly after we moved into that house, we found out that he was mentally ill, and that the truth is he was very abusive. And so soon after he was confined to a mental institution, and they were only married for about 8 months before he died. And so she married again about 5 years later, between 4 and 5 years later, a very sweet man from Blacksburg, Virginia. And he was just a wonderful male figure for me. And he had a cousin that lived two doors down. And we didn't know at the time until they married. And I think he was visiting his cousin when they met. And the cousin down the street had an orchestra. Like, he had a little band. And during the summers, once a year during the summers, they would have like a little set up in the neighborhood right out in the middle of the street on the sidewalks. And they sort of close off the street and entertain the whole neighborhood there and play gospel music. And it was just wonderful. I remember.
Would you sit on the porch and watch?
I could actually go down there and sit on their porch, and I could actually, people would bring chairs out and sit in chairs and listen.
Very
the
nice.
Whole neighborhood was just.
Did you have any particular chores that you had to do around the house on a regular basis?
Very young, I had to do chores. When we had family relatives and things in, I would have to clean up behind relatives that would come in and visit. So I learned very early to clean, and plus I told you we clean houses together, so I learned very early how to clean. And then I was always the person who did like the bathroom cleaning and the dusting. I was the dusting person and washed dishes a lot. Mm-hmm. And I love washing dishes. And she said as I grew up, she said, she said, you'll grow out of that, and that you won't want to do it after a while. But it took me a long time to not enjoy cleaning, cooking, because it was something that she liked. I especially liked washing clothes and hanging them on the line, something that a lot of kids didn't like. By me being raised by an elderly parent, I learned joys in doing things that a lot of young people didn't enjoy today or back then, and things like laundry. And to today, I still enjoy doing my laundry. Occasionally, I hang laundry on the line. But I grew up really, really young enjoying watching, seeing a nice, clean home. It just gave me that feeling that I enjoy a job well done. I learned that from her. On my job, the jobs that I've done, I've gotten lots of compliments, being a really good worker and getting my job done thoroughly.
Let's see. Do you have any particular family stories that were passed down from one generation to another? Did your grandmother have like a special family recipe or a special family story that she would always tell?
We always did a lot of canning together. I wrote a story called A Country Morning in the City, and it's the story of how I added to it. But basically, it happened. This is back when we lived on Salem, but some of this continued where they would bring meats from the country, you know, fresh killed meats, and she would bring apples and fruits from the country. What I call the country because they lived in, she was raised in Farmville, Prospect area. Her relatives would do is they would come up to visit us, and she had relatives that lived here in town, just one, and we'd go to her house, wonderful there, wonderful cook, and we'd go over there to dinner sometimes, and this was in Northwest on Mormon Road, big beautiful house. Her cousin, first cousin, never had any children, and her husband, and we'd go over there to special dinners, and she'd teach me to cook over there because she loved having children around and teaching them things. We had also neighbors in the neighborhood who loved to cook and would show me things that she didn't and didn't have children. But
was there a secret recipe?
They would pickling and canning fruits and vegetables. But my grandmother, she cooked so well everything. Pound cakes, they were really good to teach her. Sweet potato pies, I love them now. I'm trying to think of specialty things. Cabbages cooked set special ways.
Did they have a special family story that they always passed down, such as
stories of? Well, we had sad stories and good stories. My grandmother was always fearful of fire because she had witnessed her twin brother die in a fire. Her mother was a midwife, and her mother was delivering one of her first cousins. When her brother played in their fireplace back when she was growing up and down in the counties of Farmville area, Prospect and around in their Pamplin City, down that area, they lived out in the wilderness like, and they used to cook ash cakes in the fireplace back in those days. They had a lot of Native American traits, and her father had a lot of Irish traditions that he kept up because he was Irish and black. And then her mother was Native American and black. And they cooked a lot of ash cakes in the fireplace. But when her mother was out delivering, she watched her brother play in the fireplace, pretending to cook ash cakes. And a twig he had caught on fire, and his clothes caught on fire, and she couldn't help him. They were twins together at 5 years of age. She had to protect herself. That was a sad story. And the happy stories were when they would ride horses. I rode a horse once, and I wrote a poem about it down there in Farmville. They would do like, it's sort of like Little House on the Prairie. They described it like that. They would have like little get-togethers and make different kinds of wines. My grandmother, she was really good at making wines. That's another thing we used to do is make wines and ciders. She taught us that really, really young, watching her do that. Like I said, every kind of preserves. And my story I wrote is about, it says Everything Apples in the story, because the lady would, her cousin from the country would bring up Cousin Mandy, what we called her. Her name was Amanda Vaughn. And she'd bring up apples in her big truck. And we would make all kinds of apple things. And I'd wake up in the morning and smell apples and come out there and watch them do these things. And we'd watch them make apples. My grandmother's specialty, come to think of it, was a watermelon rind preserves. We'd have watermelons and save them from the summer, and take the green part inside lining and the skin and make watermelon rind preserves. And she taught me that well.
That sounds really good. Very good. Do you usually put it on just bread or?
Yes, mostly on bread, toast. It was very good.
Sounds very good.
It is.
You said that your husband served in the military in the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Did he bring any stories back from that?
One kind of sad story. His ship took a direct hit, and he has a bronze star on his license, on his tag on his car, because they took a direct hit. Only one soldier was injured. He was not injured, just frightened a lot, and witnessed the other soldier injured. They took a direct hit. They lost their ship. They later recovered it. It's a large burn hole in it. They were hit by a torpedo.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Was that his worst story?
I think that was one of his worst stories. His other stories were like good places he went. He traveled a lot of places. Italy, Spain, Japan. My mother and my stepfamily, they lived in Okinawa, Japan for 3 years, and they sent me lots of souvenirs from there. When I married, they couldn't be there because they were stationed in Okinawa and they couldn't come. My husband liked to see it. He told me that he's brought home slides. We had lots of slides of places that he, some Vietnamese pictures. He brought some of them home too.
So he took slides of
He took slides and photographs of all of his trips.
Wonderful.
And he was in. He's been in the Navy. He was also. He's retired from the Naval. He's retired from U.S. Navy, and he's also retired from the. How he did that? He came back and joined the reserves, and in the reserves they were sent on many missions, and some of the missions they were sent in the reserves. He took pictures in Honduras and places like that. That he'd go on missions.
So he's been a military well-traveled man there. You said that there was a little shop and like a little gas station. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular store or business that you guys would go to all the time when you were growing up?
Yes, when I was growing up, we lived right down the street from Garth, from the Garth Brothers Dairy. And my neighbor, the dad, worked there. Well, we called him the dad. He was really her uncle. Her aunt and uncle raised her. She was my best friend on Salem Avenue. And her name was Billy. Her uncle worked at the Garth Brothers Dairy. And the neighborhood where I live in now, I live on Garth Land Drive, is the family home of the Garth people who own that dairy.
So you live in their home.
I live now in the home area. I live in their the children's homes. What happened in that neighborhood where I live, there's a big house at the top of the hill where I live, and it's the old Garth home. It's a big white house with a summer house in back and a big yard and a pool. And all the children came around and lived in that area, and it's in Northwest. And a cousin of the family, who since passed, told me the history when I moved in the neighborhood about 30-some years ago. And he told me that the streets were named after the areas and also were named after the marriages of the children. One of the children married a Lancaster, so there's a Lancaster Avenue. One of the children married a man named Michael. I don't know what is his first or last name, but it's the street behind me is called Michael Street because of it. They also had horses, and they had cows. It was a dairy farm mostly. So what they did is they had several kinds of cows, and they named the streets after the cows where they were. They had an apple orchard, and it's called Appleton Avenue. It heads toward Peters Creek Road, and it's called Appleton Avenue. That's where the apple grove was. And I live on Garth Land, leading up to the family home. But the street next, the street perpendicular, it goes this way to me.
Yeah.
It's called Guernsey Lane, and that's where they kept the Guernsey cows. And the street that it goes into is called Angus Road. That's where they kept the Angus cows. And like all the names have different family names or animal names or orchard names.
Nice.
In the neighborhood. And they told me that the man sit me down when I moved in the neighborhood and told me the story of the neighborhood. And the Garth Brothers Dairy in Southwest on Salem Avenue is where we all would gather together on hot summer days and meet Mr. Paul, her uncle, and he would come out and give us the leftovers of the popsicles, mm-hmm. and we'd eat brown bears. You know what I'm talking about? They're like popsicles. That's another name now. I'm sure for them. Ice cream, vanilla popsicles covered in chocolate dipped.
Oh, yeah.
And he would bring out the leftovers that they were going to just discard and throw away, and they would give it to Mr. Paul for him to give to the neighborhood kids, and we'd all sit around the back door of the dairy, and we'd eat the popsicles. And I remember that.
So that's kind of the ones that didn't come out right? Or
yeah, the ones left over that were getting outdated. You know, where they didn't, and they would have like an ice cream truck that would go around and deliver ice cream and milk. They had milk trucks, you know, and then we got our milk through, too. They would deliver milk to our houses, to the milkman. And then later on, there was Pet, and we'd have like, it was competition between the Garths and the Pet. But we lived right there on the Garths, on the street with the Garths Brothers Dairy. And Mr. Paul would bring us home leftovers sometimes, too.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. You said there was a Pet. I've seen that in some
the Pet dairy.
Yeah, I've seen the cans that say Pet for milk and stuff mm-hmm. sometimes in the convenience stores around here. Right.
But there was a Pet dairy also.
Did they buy out the Garths Brothers?
I think later on it was, they changed it to Pet. It's something else now. It's a factory or corporation now. I watched a lot of those buildings go up there now. Gray Bar was one of the factories that, it's like a wholesale, I think it's wholesale machinery or something that they made there. I watched them build that. There was also a Lance. They had bakeries, dry cleaners, and places like that at that time, right across the street from my house. They've since long gone. But like I said, there was a hotel. But see, when I moved up to 13th Street, it was a really residential area. We had neighborhood grocers. I worked in one of the neighborhood grocers off Salem Avenue and 13th Street. The Wiggins Grocery is now a church. I worked in that store. And then sometimes in the, I'm thinking it's called Mansour, there were their cousins. These people were all Lebanese. And when they would have Lebanese parties and weddings, I took care of the children to the Wiggins family who were married, they were Lebanese. And helped raise their five daughters and went to their weddings when they grew up. Mm-hmm. And that's where I first saw my father, was at the Wiggins store. But there's a store called Libby's. It's still real popular today on Salem Avenue. Really famous. They were cousins also. All these people were cousins. And I would go to their family reunions and help with the food serving. And I also learned about the Lebanese food, and they helped teach me a little bit how to do it and taste it and learn about it. And they taught me some of their family history and learned the music.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what your fondest childhood memory is? For example, did you have a favorite holiday event, favorite family vacation, a special gift that you received? It's hard to pick a favorite.
A lot. Well, my favorite place was playing in my playhouse in the crawl space underneath the back porch. Well, we could play church and doctor in school. I just enjoyed that the most. Because the Playhouse Doctor story I wrote is about my neighbors. I had neighbors who come as far as 12th Street and 12 and a half and 12th Street. Sometimes 11th Street would come all the way up and we'd play church and we'd baptize. And we'd have like the Holy Spirit to come in and like at church and we'd pray. But we'd also have, we played school and I enjoyed being the teacher. And I work as a teacher now. And I enjoyed playing doctor and nurse, and I was always the surgeon and the doctor, and I'm a nurse now. And we would sneak in the house and gather up cotton balls and pour red Kool-Aid over them. And we'd put forceps. I found forceps in my house. The lady who lived there, one of my grandfather's former wives, was very ill and had a visiting home doctor that would come in back in those days to your home, and she died, I think, of a heart attack, but she also had some other ailments, and back then you could call the doctor and he would come to your home, and some of his utensils got left there, and I had forceps, and I had tweezers, and I had some things of his. So I took a big old silver bowl and I poured Kool-Aid and cotton balls in there, and we pretend like there were tonsils that we were removing from the children. And we just made it like real life. And we made mud pies and act like we were cooking dinner and put grass in it and like vegetables. And we played school. We'd go in and get paperwork and be the teacher. And I had a family up the street from me, the Mayo family. The mom was a single mom. The children were raised by grandmother and mom. And they had she had 10 children, two sets of twins. And they were allowed to come to my house because we had the big fenced-in backyard. And they had a big two-story house, but their backyard was open with no fence. And she'd allow them to come down to get special permission. I went up and asked special permission. And we would teach them, and they were all younger than me. And we would teach them, have church with them. And we would have cook with them. And we would have, sometimes my grandmother would give us real food. And it was like, that was my fond memories. That's why I wrote that story, the Playhouse Doctors.
Playing under that crawl space.
And then we also went to the country. Like I told you, in the summers, we would go to Statesville, North Carolina to visit a friend she met, the Gaither family. And then we had another, we'd go visit her relatives also in Farmsville, and that's Cousin Mandy's. And they were sharecroppers, and they had a big farm, but they were paid to keep the farm, but they didn't own the farm. And they were allowed some of the foods and vegetables, and that's when we'd get out. They'd give us a share and bring to us to Roanoke from Farmsville.
And you make the preserves.
That's when I would ride. I rode a horse for the first time, and I wrote a poem about it.
How old were you when you rode your horse?
Believe it or not, I was just about engaged. I didn't ride the horse until I was about 19. And I had just finished nursing school and went to this, took my husband down there to meet them. And he was still asleep. He was still asleep in the uncle's room. And I had slept with the aunt and one of the cousins, and one of the cousins came by riding his horse, and I was awake, and my husband was still sleeping. He'd done all the driving, and my grandmother was there, and my adopted grandmother's cousin, and his name was Emmanuel, and he was 6'3" or 6'4", really tall, and he had a tall horse, and her name was Annie, and he gave Annie an apple, and he said, "I want you to ride Caroline around," and well, he told, I didn't know this. I didn't hear him. And he came behind me. He was a jokester. And he teased me. And he picked me up and put me on Annie. And I didn't, no saddle, just bareback. And he thought Annie was, she was gentle to him and obeyed him. But for some reason, she didn't like me. And she,
oh my goodness.
She took off with me. And I held to the mane. And she rode me around the farm between the bushes, the hedges, and the trees with me screaming in shock. I mean, I didn't scream a lot. I was in shock mostly. And I wrote a poem about it. And it was my first experience riding a horse. After that, I rode a pony once since then at a kiddie thing we did to raise money through my job when I was in college. You know, when I was in college, I did my internship at Grandin Road Reach, and they did like a pony show. And that's the second time I've ever been on a horse. But this was a full-grown horse I was riding. And he whistled and blew and made noises. And finally she calmed down and brought me back to him. And he slapped his thigh, and she let me down. She bent down and let me off. And I was still in shock. But I never fell off. And it was just this scary, giddy, scary experience. And I wrote a poem about it. I like to write poetry.
What kind of work have you done throughout your life? Has it mostly been nursing?
I've done many, many jobs. I started out at 9 years of age. I always loved children. When I was 7 years old, we would go to the country in North Carolina, Statesville. A lady there we met was the daughter of the people that my grandmother knew. She married the Gaither family. She had 9 children. Every year she had a new baby. We'd go down there. And the first time I did it, it scared them. I was 7. They couldn't find the baby. I had the baby. Well, after that, every year I'd go down there and they'd hand me the baby because I love babies so much. And I would always go, they would say, "Where's Carolyn?" She's somewhere with the baby. She's not out playing. She's with the baby. And I just love babies. And so then, I enjoy interior decoration. I've always enjoyed that. I used to go to friends' homes in the neighborhood, just enjoyed decorating their homes, just always enjoyed cleaning. And so, not so much sewing right at first, but when I was really, really young, I mean, 8 years of age, I would love going in and reorganizing the furniture and moving around and some light sewing, you know. But then I also enjoyed going with them to ball games. Some of these people would take me to ball games, something I had never done before.
Where did you go to the ball game? Salem?
There was a park. I think, you know, back then I think it was my field. And that's the same thing as, I'm trying to think of right over here. What is it?
Highland Park?
No, it's the same thing with Victory Stadium now.
Oh,
but back
okay.
then we used to go there and it was just a ball field. You could go and watch the ball games. People just played baseball.
Did you just sit on the grass?
We walked around a lot. I'm thinking we did sit on the grass. We take blankets. And Mr. Paul used to take me, the same man that worked at the pet dairy.
Okay. So as far as jobs that you've had.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I started out real young, like I said, doing that. And then I moved up to working for the people that were Lebanese. And I cleaned and I did mostly cleaning and babysitting. I worked my way up. They didn't trust me with the babies right at first because I was just 9 years of age. But I did have that history where I had started when I was 7. I mostly at first did cleaning and laundry. And as the babies began to come, because the daughter was a newlywed couple, and lived with the mom. I helped her run the store. The mom was up in age, and the dad had just passed, the granddad had just passed to the children. And I began to babysit the children. The children took a liking to me really young. And as she had 5 girls, I babysit those girls and went to school. And when I was 17, it was just too much doing schoolwork and babysitting and cleaning. So I did it in the summers some, and then until I was 17. And I went to OIC and went to school a little bit there. And anything I was low in, math was not a high point for me. So they helped bring my math up to the point I was able to get into nursing school. And they, like I said, they paid my way and put me through that. And I graduated Lucy Addison Brown Memorial Hospital School of Nursing. Okay. Mrs. Smith was my teacher and Mrs. Stewart. They helped me through a lot. And some of my classmates also ended up there. I could have taken it in high school, but I didn't know about it. Back then, you could go to high school in your senior year and take nursing. I wasn't allowed to do anything like that, though, because remember, I wasn't allowed to many places. So.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked for me, but I went to OIC, and they paid for all my equipment and everything. I started at 17. I turned 18 the month after I started. My birthday was in September. I started late August. I finished the class 18 months later, and around May or June, and I took a little bit of extra classes afterwards and in the summer, and started my first job working as a nurse, LPN at Community Hospital. I worked there, and then I had just met my husband. I worked there for about 2 years. After I worked there about 2 years and was married, the shifts were just really hard on me. Working evening shifts from being young married, I didn't get to see my husband a lot because of the shifts he worked. And so then I eventually stopped doing the nursing. I wasn't feeling well. I just got to where I wasn't feeling well. I had been told as a teenager that I would never have any children. I took a job working after I went back to OIC and took some classes to try to get into business to work some, you know, to an office job. And I took it only for a short time. We needed some money, and we wanted to get a house about. I worked there. I went to school for a short time at OIC, took some business classes, and learned kind of quickly, really. I took some shorthand, bookkeeping, typing. Before I could finish any of that, I was offered a job. So I took a job for an insurance company called it was called Travelers Medicare. And I worked there for about 2 months, and the company decided to move to Richmond. And then during that time, I started feeling really ill. And I when the company moved, they said, if you can move to Richmond, you can go. My husband didn't want me to, and I didn't really want to move. So a friend there was a nurse also, and she got a job, and she put in several offers for jobs, and three people called her for jobs. She told one of them about me, and they hired me. It was Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Medicaid.
Okay.
Shortly after I worked there, I got really, really ill and began to go into the doctor. They did several tests on me. They didn't know what was wrong with me. It took them 2 months to find out that I was a month pregnant. And I was completely out of any kids.
And they said you weren't.
And so I worked, right. So I worked there for about 7-8 months, and then I left there. They gave someone else my job, and so I went back to, after having the baby, I went to doing like private duty nursing every now and then. So I went back to that. But meanwhile, I did some nursing. I did private duty. As my child grew, I wanted to be home with her some. I stayed home some with her, but then I found a job working as, I wanted to go back to work when she was about 3. I did some nursing homework a little bit, part-time. But it was midnight, and that wasn't good. I didn't sleep well in the day. So I eventually took a job at a place called Equifax Services, working as a file clerk, because that's what I had done at the insurance companies. I was a file clerk, and some I was a claims adjuster. And so I went to Equifax Services that did, what they did is they did investigations for insurance companies to find out if you're records that you gave them were legitimate. They really investigated you because it was house insurance, fire insurance, car insurance, and some of the policies were $1 million policies. So they investigated the people. I worked there for 4 years, and then I moved from there and went to Liberty Mutual Insurance Company for a short time. I was putting my daughter through private school. She was having some difficulty learning in public, and I put her in private for 3 years. And then I moved her back to public, and she did well. But I went to a place called Allstate Finance and worked a while, and it was just very tedious. And
so
I left there. I went different kinds of jobs.
Office kind of thing.
I did a lot of medical office, and I'd always wanted to be a teacher, too. And but what happened was I ended up back a lot in private part-time nursing mostly, because full-time nursing was just kind of hard for me. But eventually, my daughter, when she was 9 or 10, I ended up taking in some children to raise in the family. I took some children in that were, their mother was not fit to raise them, and she was single. When I took them in, I ended up still getting a nursing job at the VA Medical Center. I went to work there, worked there for 5.5 years. While I was there, I became ill. It was just too much for me. I felt like I had a heart condition I had had since young childhood and didn't realize it. A heart murmur and a mitral valve problem. So I got out of nursing then, slowly. I needed the monies. I got out of nursing slowly by going to Virginia Weston to try out to see if I could go to college. I did very well in college and eventually earned a scholarship. And I was going to get into architectural things. I always liked art. But after taking in these children, I took in, some of them had physical difficulties, emotional difficulties. And it was going to put me away from home a lot from them. So I gave up on the architectural and ended up getting into early childhood education. I got my associate degree in that with a scholarship and worked part-time at Friendship Manor Nursing Home on weekends.
I think I know where that is. It's down Williamson, a little further from Hirschberger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Worked there on weekends only. And I only worked every other weekend so I could spend time with my family still. And then when I finished and got my degree, I put in 18 different applications. Honeytree Early Learning Center in Salem was the first to call me, and so I went there to work, and I worked there.
That's the one next to Lewis Gate,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's the one next to the VA Medical Center.
Oh, okay. Then you were sure
I worked there for 8.5 years. Then I decided to venture back into some nursing to see how I could do in nursing. I went back to nursing, but it was just too much. I did it for 4 months at the Berkshire in Benton. And they asked my daughter to please talk me into not leaving. I got attached to the elderly. I've always been attached to the elderly and the very young. And I think it's because as a young child, I was raised by an adopted parent, grandparent. And I always felt for children I've always had a feel for children who were adopted, foster homes or just not wanted. And when I was a young child, my desire was, I didn't understand the Catholic faith. And I thought to be a nun, all you had to do was to be a nun. You know, to say, I want to be a nun. And then you could take in children, homeless children. So I said, I want to be a nun when I grow up. But I found out that that wasn't true. So then and with me being in nursing, I always tried to help children who were sick. Enjoyed working with sick children. I did eventually, like I said, take in children to raise. I helped a lot of people raise their children throughout my life. As they were having problems, I would take their child in for 3 or 4 days and give them back to them. I've done that lots.
So you've been essentially a foster mother mm-hmm. in certain respects.
And I've taken in children in my husband's family and raised them. And there are 3 of my children that I listed.
Frank, Latanya, and Douglas.
Mm-hmm. And I raised them from 1.5, 2.5, and 4.5.
So you were pretty much their mother during the whole time.
They call me mom. I've been their mom since I've had them. I work now. When I left the Berkshire, my daughter was taking exercise classes. She's also in child care. She worked in child care right out of high school. She took it in high school. And my daughter's a middle school special education teacher's aide, teacher's assistant. She's very good with children also. When I took in those children to raise, she was very good at helping me. She bonded with them right away. They were very close. She's my only child. I had many miscarriages. I had always wanted a big family. I had many miscarriages. I lost twins and several single births.
But you did have your one daughter.
I had my one daughter. She's the one I had when I worked at the insurance company.
Okay. I have a few other questions about the Roanoke area.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever use the public library?
Oh, gosh, yes. growing up with parents who couldn't read or write, I often had to get help. I did have neighbors who helped me a lot on the 13th Street area. A lady, Miss Eva Perry, was recently buried. I went to her funeral. She helped me a great deal. Not having learned parents, she helped me with my homeworks a lot. She had a typewriter when we didn't have. I also forgot to tell you, I work at First Baptist Church Child Development Center now. I've been there 11 years. I left Honey Tree in the Berkshire and there. I just couldn't get away from the kids. And I work with 1 and 2 year olds. I took work with 1 year olds turning 2. I love it. I'm going to try to retire next year, but I'll probably volunteer, go back and volunteer.
You're not volunteering with the library.
I love it. I thought about it. I've met someone here when I come here. I've brought many teenage, my teenage children and stepchildren. I brought them here and helped them with their homeworks. I am a tutor to everybody's child. I should work as a tutor. I've tutored my children, my adopted children, my children, other people's children. When I was in college, I worked as a tutor, as a matter of fact. I earned money that way to see me through college and with the raising my family. I made $80 a month. I worked in the work center. I think it's called the work center, the learning center.
Right.
I went to community college.
Okay.
And I worked there. It was my work study. And I worked under a professor. Her name is Susan Trent. And she told me, she said, you should have been an English teacher because I worked with students mostly with their English because I was really good at writing, reading, and just things to do with English, you know, grammar.
What particular library branches have you used the most, would you say?
I've come here a lot.
To the main library?
To the main library, because a lot of times when the other libraries would... But I've gone to the Williamson Road a lot. I live in Northwest Roanoke. I've gone to the Lansdowne occasionally. I've gotten the school that I work at, First Baptist Church. I've gotten books there because I'm a teacher there. And for my group times and when I do lesson plans, I often go to the library and get books concerning my lesson plans. My favorite lesson plan is around Thanksgiving. I do The Relatives Came. And I always come to get, we have it now at the church library. I do also use our church library a lot. And we have it now there. It's called The Relatives Came. It's by, I think her name is Carolyn Bryant. And she's from West Virginia. It's a story about a family who goes from Virginia to West Virginia to visit families, sleep in the, it's like out in the country, and they sleep together in this small house on the floor, on the chairs, and they love each other, and they hug each other, they kiss each other, and then they come home to the grapes in Virginia when they're ripe, and they make grapes. They make grape everything, like I talked about, the apples in my family. And I always get, when it wasn't available at my job, I would always come to the library here because we're right near my job. And I'd come here and get, the relatives came. But lots of times I come and get other books and take them back, and I don't allow the children to touch them because they're one and two. But I allow them to look at the big pictures as I tell the stories during group time, during my lesson, you know, during my whatever theory I'm on at the time.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Would you describe some cultural events that have happened in Roanoke over time? I know you said there's like the little jazz band in the street.
Right, I love that.
You also mentioned that you went to the ball games and things like this. Were there any other ones that you should mention?
My grandmother always took us to the circus.
The circus?
And the circus we had, she called it the fairgrounds.
Okay.
And back then, it wasn't Victory Stadium, or it was really near the Civic Center. There was a place there, I don't know if it was the Kazem Temple then, because I remember seeing the Kazem clowns, but where we went was near Hotel Roanoke. It's right there on the spot near the Civic Center where the fountain, across from Hotel Roanoke, where the fountain flows.
I think I know what you're talking about.
You know, it springs up and looks like a geyser.
Yeah,
In the old days, there was a brick structure there, and my grandmother called it the fairgrounds because they would have like inside circus and an outside fair, and it was like they do at the Civic Center in Salem in the summers. You know, they have like the animals, the cows and the horses and the
lions
animals.
And tigers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they would do it there, and she called it the circus because she just called the whole thing the circus at the fairgrounds. And we would go in on the back of Mr. Paul's truck, because he had a truck. And we'd go there at night, and they'd have the rides, the Ferris wheel, the old-fashioned rides. And we'd ride, and they'd have the ponies. And we'd go there at night, and that was always a ritual that we would do that.
Would it be like every summer?
Yeah, it would be every summer. It would always be so hot. And we'd go there in the summer.
Can you think of any strong community leaders that you've had contact with, and what role did they play in your life?
My pastor was—he was like my dad. He told me I was always grieving that I didn't get to live with my mom or dad, but especially my dad. I got to know my mom. I didn't get to know my dad at all, and I went into a horrible time. My dad passed away without me knowing him, and I thought he had passed away when I was a newborn, but I found out that this was a theory that was not true, and it was to protect me, supposedly. But I found out that he had died right after he died, and I couldn't be with him or anything. They took him away to bury him, so I couldn't be with him. So. I didn't feel comfortable talking a lot of times at home because I wasn't allowed to discuss these things. So I talked to my pastor at Morningstar Baptist Church, where I, like I said, had joined the church, and they were just like my family, my pastor and his wife, and some of the other church members there that I was close to. And he said, God is your father. He said, whenever you feel alone, God is your father. Don't feel like you don't have a father. And my mother had remarried my stepfather, but they lived in Japan, and they lived in Nevada, and they lived in Colorado, and faraway places, and I was never there.
So this pastor
became like a father to me. Also, I used to babysit for Noel C. Taylor, who lived in the neighborhood of the mayor, who lived in the neighborhood of my church back in those days. The Henderson family was a Sunday school teacher there, she and her husband. I babysat for them. They were really mentors for me. Other mentors I had that I thought highly of were my teachers. They were just so wonderful to me, my teachers. They made me want to be a teacher. And I had nurse friends that I knew across the street from my house that I looked up to them. They were nurses.
Very nice. So I take it, the next question I have here was, who were your role models? But yeah, obviously they were your role models.
They were. Some of the families. Also, when I was growing up, I was allowed to watch certain TV. It's old-fashioned, I know. And in my day, this is what was on TV. And I think in a lot of ways it saved me, that in TV, that in church. I was allowed to watch TV, and I was allowed to watch things like Father Knows Best, Lassie, Leave It to Beaver type shows. I was allowed to watch National Velvet, shows where there was always a mother, always a father, always a church going. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was always a lot of values, a lot of morals. And even though in my lifetime growing up in my household, I saw a lot of things that were not very moral, very good morals, I decided very young in age, some people might not agree with me, but I looked up to Father Knows Best. And I looked up to Lassie's dad, Lassie's, the little boy's dad. I looked up to the mom. I had neighbors in my neighborhood that were elderly retired school teachers and their husbands. Some of them didn't have children, railroad retirement workers, and their wives. Just they were my role models, and I watched them. And like I said, we had some single family people in my neighborhood, but there were very few. Most of the neighbors I lived around were retired married couples, widowed ladies who had been married and raised their families. Just really, those were my good role models. And at church, I had mostly married families. Occasionally, I ran into people who, you know, were not married and had children, but it was very, very seldom. When I had so many more that weren't, you know, I just had so many. Most of the families were not single home families. And my role models were also the people up the street from me. I told you about that, the late girl that drew. And she just kind of grew away from drawing. And I was just so fascinated with her drawing that I began to copy everything she did. I liked her so much. I wanted to write like her, do everything she did. We were the exact same age. And her older sisters, I looked up to them. They were good role models. They made A's and B's in school. Back then it was E's and B's. It was E's and B's. I don't think it was B's. It was like E's and G's back in those days. E's and G's were A's and B's back in those days. And I wanted to be like them.
I'm going to pause this for a short bathroom break.
Okay.
And we are back. This is Sarah Lavender interviewing Carolyn Ann Johnson Jones. And I'm going to see if I can hear myself. Yes, I can. So let's go on with our next question. How has Roanoke changed over the years? And I guess you would say major points that come to mind.
Let's see. It changed a lot when, in my senior year, I was allowed to go, if I wanted to Jefferson High School. That's changed a lot where kids are still bused, but not bused so far away from their home. Yes, they are. I mean, they really are, because the schools they have so many more children in the schools now. Back then, we didn't, you know, everybody knew, the way I went to school, you know, being that way, everybody knew, it was like a lot of your family or friends, because, all kids from the other side of the, you know, the tracks, but they were like all black. Now it's different. Children from everywhere are allowed to come in. You can even pay and go to a different school out here now.
Yeah, I think it's
if you want to.
$500, but you can go to any school that you want now.
I guess you could even go to school in Salem, Virginia, living in Roanoke, Virginia, if you pay the fee.
Yeah.
That's how the schools have changed. The workplaces back when, it's just like they have, I've seen it on videos about different towns. I do remember like the times when I would come downtown Roanoke and want to go to, say, like Woolworth or Crest stores downtown. It's true, although they say it's actually true. They wouldn't let you eat there. I remember being using the horse fountain outside of Kroger. And no, I'm wrong. It's A&P. It's called A&P downtown. We had that down here. Now, where is some of the old buildings are still there where the coffee pot, is that the teapot? The coffee pot, where it's H&C Coffee?
Yeah.
Back in the old days, I'm glad they revived it back because they moved it across the street. I used to like watching that, waiting on the school bus downtown. Sometimes in the icy snow up to my knees, going to school, coming home from school in the snow, watching that. And the buildings have been all the buildings, they didn't tear them down, they renovated them, and I like that. Like some of these downtown buildings, instead of tearing them down, they just kind of remodeled them and saved some of the stone in there. I like the way they saved some of the stones in there, some of the brick laying they saved. Keep it from changing completely. But the hospitals and things like that are so different. I was just at Baltimore Hospital this morning. Used to be, a little while back, everybody wanted to go to community hospital. It was the more modern new hospital. Now that they've renovated Baltimore Hospital, everybody, all the children have to go there. So that's changed, and it's very beautiful. I enjoy being there. It's very nice. The churches are different. Back when I was growing up, we didn't, the church where I work at First Baptist Church Child Development Center. Not too many people would go to First Baptist downtown that I would know. But nowadays, I know people that go there. Well, more blacks are going to white churches. Now, more whites are going to black churches. That's changed. We didn't have it that way with the buildings.
So just a lot more integration.
A lot more integration. I think what you said, like with the mills, I remember when the mill out here going toward Victory Stadium was working.
The silk mill.
I remember when that was working. A lot of people worked there that I knew. Some of the, like for instance, the old Garth Brothers Dairy that was up the street from my house when I lived on Salem Avenue. It went completely out of business. Well, first it went to Pet. Pet did buy it out. And then it went from that to some kind type of, I think now it's some type of, not a factory, but they manufacture something.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, it might even be a warehouse now, because at first it went to some type of manufacturing place that manufactured something there, like a factory. And now it's I think it is a warehouse.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of the buildings downtown, they are renovating them and changing them and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are apartments downtown and some of the buildings that used to be stores when I was little. We walked downtown, we didn't drive. We rode the bus or walked everywhere we went. So that means Northwest. We walked from Southwest to Northwest to visit friends. Every Saturday, just about, we would walk to downtown. We'd go to the bakery. It's no longer there, the Rainbow Bakery. I think now the Rainbow Bakery is in Northwest, but it was the bakery. They changed it to Merida, the bakery down on Campbell. I think it's at Campbell, I think.
There's a campus, right?
It was a bakery there right across from the used car lot. We used to walk there and get the old bread, and we would go, and while we're doing that, we'd go to the Goodwill store downtown. Well, they don't have that anymore. There's a Goodwill in every neighborhood now. And we'd go, I'd save up my money, I'd babysit or clean up somewhere and save my money and go shopping at the Goodwill store downtown. That's across from where the bus terminal is. And I'd go there and get my grandmother a present, or I'd get her a birthday present there, or also every holiday I'd get her something there. It was just a Valentine's something. We didn't have much money. That's the way I'd shop. And then if I had more money, I might go to Crest. Or I'm trying to think of the other name of the other store. It was another store. They had Leggett's and Millen Rhodes, but we usually couldn't afford that. It's a special occasion.
Grants. Was Goodwill the same way that it is now, where people gave their old stuff?
Yes, they did. But it's so much cleaner and neater now. Back in the old day, I remember one time taking my daughter to the Goodwill. Was it a child I was babysitting, maybe? No, not my daughter. A child I was babysitting. I didn't have kids yet. And the child got so dirty, I never went back with her. The floors were not kept as clean. Now they more strive to fix it up like a regular department store, clothing store.
But the other stores that you mentioned, I think it's like Leggett's or
Grant. Yeah, I highly ever went to Legacy. It was so much more expensive, and Sears was downtown, and it was more expensive, and Millen Roads and Hieronymus, stores like that were. They were the high class stores. We went there on very special occasions when you had to gather money to earn money, you know, together or get help with money to go there. We would go to Grant's, Crest. We would go to there was another one. I think mostly Grant's and Crest is where we went.
Well, there's some stores you said you weren't allowed into. Was there a particular
We were allowed to go in there and shop, but we weren't allowed to sit down and eat food. And that was Crest and Grant's. And, well, really, we didn't go to the other stores, but if we did, we weren't allowed to eat there either if they had food there. And it would be like Hieronymus. I don't think they had foods. I'm not sure because I didn't go there very much. And the restaurants that were down there, we weren't allowed to eat in there either.
And you weren't allowed to eat at any of the restaurants down there?
We used to stand by the Horse Head and eat. Do you know what I mean, the Horse Head? The Horse Head was the fountain for blacks. We could drink water from the Horse Head. We couldn't drink water from the water fountain. And we weren't allowed in the bathrooms either. They had special bathrooms we could go to, and they were called the Negro bathrooms.
So they had signs.
Oh, there were signs saying no Negroes allowed.
All over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you notice that all that really started to change and that things became a lot more integrated?
It changed when the schools changed. After the schools changed, when I was allowed to, well, they said I could go to Jefferson if I wanted to, Jefferson High School. My grandmother was so fearful. She was so afraid. She said, no. She said, you stay right where you are. She was afraid someone would hurt me if I went there. And I was always so tiny. And she was afraid that someone would hurt me. She said, you're just a little thing anyway. And she said, you stay right where you are. You're safe there. So I went back to Addison and graduated from Addison. And most of my friends did. Very few of my friends went to William Fleming or Jefferson.
So during your high school years is when the schools really started to change.
Right, they changed the summer of my senior, the summer of my junior year. The summer after my junior year.
So you had only been able to go there for one year.
1 year is all I would have got to go there and graduate in Jefferson.
So I can see why your grandmother would have been fearful.
She said, why move? And it's safer to stay where you are. Because back in those days, they were afraid that someone was going to hurt you because there were so many people picketing, and it was all on the news, on the TV, and on the radio, and on the news broadcast. You know, about people were speaking out their minds about how much they were against it, and bad things they thought were going to happen. You know, that their children were going to be pick up their bad ideas from other people.
As far as the Hurt Park area, you've lived over in that area as well, from what I understand.
Right, that's where.
How do you feel that neighborhood's changed over the years?
Well, I hated so much that. I was so proud of the Hurt Park apartments when they were built. I watched them go up, and they were beautiful. I thought back then they were just the most beautiful because I had. The house that I grew up in was like an older house. It was small. My grandmother kept it up pretty good, but we had difficulty keeping broken things fixed a lot. And I knew so many people who lived in housing that was just really, really bad. So when I saw them build the Hurt Park neighborhood at first, the neighborhood community of the duplexes, apartments, I was so proud because a lot of the houses they tore down at that time were just really run-down housing. And some of my friends lived in them, and some of them moved away when they tore the houses down. Instead of them moving into the Hurt Park community, just sort of like Lincoln Terrace back then too, they built both of them up. And when I watched them do that, I thought it was just so beautiful.
I'm sorry. Do you remember what year that was?
Let's see. My sister was in Hurt Park school. It bound to have been in my junior high years when I was at Booker T in, say, maybe the eighth grade, around the eighth grade, between the seventh and eighth grade, my junior high year. I went to I graduated in 67. 63, I went to Addison. So that means it would have probably been 62. Between 62, 64, somewhere around there.
And that's when they came up.
It's when they came up. And I watched them go up because I had friends that lived in the houses nearby. And I had friends who lived in the rundown houses that they tore down. And I watched those friends move to Northwest. Because when they tore the houses down, they had to move away. And some of them had fairly halfway nice houses there amongst the houses that were really terrible. So they just tore the whole, they bought them out and tore down the whole area and to build this nice apartment complex. And it was just beautiful. And I hated to see it go down over the years to the point that they had to tear it down now. And now they're building new townhouses over there that are very beautiful. And I hate the thought to think if someday they may have to tear them down. You know, I hate to see that cycle.
Yeah. Well, another question I have is, what jobs were available for men and women in Roanoke back in those days? You said your grandmother usually did a lot of kind of maid type work.
A lot of people did that.
What did the men usually do? Did they work in the mills, warehouses?
Right, the men worked in the mills. The men also, a lot of them worked as cooks at the places like Hotel Roanoke. When I was little like that, a lot of the men worked in construction on the roads. You know, you'd see them on the roads working. The truth is a lot of the really high-paying jobs the men that I knew didn't have. Mr. Paul worked at the dairy. Lived next door to us. I didn't have a lot of men in my neighborhood that I could remember. I'm sorry. A lot of the men that I saw, they peddled on the roads. They peddled on the roads, and they sold, some of them sold foods on the roads.
Like the ice cream trucks?
Yeah, ice cream trucks. They did that type of thing. I knew people who had, my grandmother called them huxtables. She called them huxtables. She had her words for everything. She sort of had an accent, and I used to wonder how much of her accent came from her father. Because she had a lot of accent in her talking, and she had words. She made up her own words. She didn't read or write, but I guess that was the name that they were called. And a huxtable is a person who grows their garden and puts the foods in a little truck, like in a little wagon, like on the back of a truck or whatever. And they went from neighborhood to neighborhood selling right on the road.
Their vegetables or whatever.
Like a vegetable cart, they call them nowadays. You could just park and sell vegetables on the road now, you know. But I mean, these people, like, it was like an ice cream truck going around selling ice cream. They went around selling potatoes and onions, and there were people that did that. We also had a man, we called him our wood man. He was the black man who lived out in the county or had family in the county or whatever, and he lived here at one time, and I think he moved to the county. And what he would do is he would chop down trees and chop up wood and put it on his truck. And his name was Mr. Cooper, and he would drive around, and he was our wood man. He'd bring us wood. They had some coal trucks that they had some black men who worked on. They would come and deliver your coal from the coal companies. They did that. We had people that worked at filling stations. They'd pump your gas.
That's when they still actually came out to the car and pumped your gas.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of any big time people I knew. I'd say Mayor Taylor. He had a good job. The Henderson family at my church at Morningstar, his wife had a very good job. She worked at, I think at one time he'd worked there too, and it was General Electric. She was actually a secretary there, which was really out of the normal. You didn't meet very many black women who had. I knew one lady who was an insurance secretary in an insurance office. I didn't know that many.
So they usually worked as secretaries, not as the actual agents.
This lady, she lived in the Hurt Park area, and she was one of the ones that they bought her house, and she moved to Northwest to finish raising her family. I graduated with her daughters. She worked for an insurance company, a black insurance company called North Carolina Mutual.
So at that time, back when you were younger, they actually had separate companies to serve blacks.
Right. They had black insurance companies, white insurance companies. They had, we actually had black oil and coal companies. because my nursing teacher's husband, he's run for office in the past. He has his own A. Byron Smith. He has his own iron and he has his own oil and coal company. Hmm. You could buy oil and coal from them. Mm-hmm. And they, people had their own, like I said, wood companies. You could buy your wood for your wood stove.
Is there anything else that we didn't cover you'd like to share with us? This is a general thing, as you know, part of Roanoke over the years or Hurt Park over the years.
Well, a lot of the people that I knew in the Hurt Park area, some of them their children and grandchildren still live there. A lot of them, though, they've moved on to Northwest. I know a lot of them have moved to Northwest. But there are a few of the grandchildren that still live in that neighborhood. They lived in the Hurt Park area that's torn down, that's building up new. Some of them still live in the old houses over there, but most of them have, a lot of them have moved away. The Hurt Park School, I'm glad, is still standing. So a lot of schools, they're changing up and getting rid of. I enjoyed the program. I went there recently. They didn't used to do that, put on folk dance shows to bring the communities together. That was very nice. I just went to.
And you actually signed up for the same thing that I did, because you were on the same sheet that I was on,
mm-hmm.
Where they had like a whole thing with like races and mm-hmm. things like that. Do they do that kind of community stuff often? Having races and having kids' activities.
You mean at Hurt Park?
Yeah, Hurt Park.
You mean in the past did they do it?
Yeah. Is that something that they've started doing? Or
I think they've started
doing
that. We've had a lot of the schools, we've had Black History events over the years, gospel events. I noticed a lot of that, like at Fleming, now we have it. Back in years past, at Addison, we used to have plays, religious plays, and they'd be held at Addison. And it'd be, a Black play, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they used the schools to do it. And Hurt Park has done things like that in the past.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now they have like gospel programs. Sometimes if the churches, if it's a big gospel program that they're incorporating several Black churches, quote Black churches, they would have it there because it wouldn't be enough room in their small churches.
Okay.
Have it at Hurt Park.
So there's a lot of small churches over in the Hurt Park area?
Yes, a lot. Some of the stores that I told you that I worked at have become small Black churches. A lot of them. There was a store on Salem Avenue and around the 1500, between the 14 and 1500 block, that it used to be a store. It's been a church now for many years. It's a small Black church. A Black church is right there where my husband, when he came to Roanoke, he wasn't born and raised here. When he came here, he lived in a big two-story house over there, and it's on Roar. They turned that store into a church. A lot of the stores up there that, like I said, they were the cousins of the people that I worked for. A lot of them were cousins. They were Lebanese. Their stores were, most of their stores, as a matter of fact, up there, except Libby's, were turned into churches.
So you got quite a lot of history in that area and mm-hmm. kept all the old buildings.
And the family of my best friend I told you that I learned to draw from,
mm-hmm.
her family home is still there. Her father still lives. Her mother recently passed. And her older sister passed. And I was recently up there. And it just, I joined a singing group not too long ago, and I since don't do it. The man that I was singing with, he played guitar. He's been really ill, but we had practice in an old church up there. It was his church. They don't use it anymore. It was condemned. It's so old, and it began to go. Everything began to decay in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I practiced up there and looked around, and we would still using it to practice in for our gospel sings. We go around and sing. When I was there, I got to see the neighborhood. It's really deteriorated a lot, but I could remember, sit there and remember the families that used to live in those houses. Most of them, the parents are, long dead. And the children I went to school with, some of them have jobs. A lot of them have jobs in offices downtown. They've done well. The children have gone, you know, to do very well. I'm proud of that. We come, most of us come from the same background of where, you know, we watch the same shows on TV. And because I remember they're, we all watching the same good role models. But they, most of them had two parents. And some of them were the parents, like I said, were good role models for me. Right there in that neighborhood on Roar Avenue and Salem Avenue. And people on 15th Street, 14th Street. I used to spend a lot of time on 14th and 15th Streets as well. Those houses. My house, by the way, the house that I grew up in was bought from my grandmother as she was passing away from cancer by the city of Roanoke, and the house was renovated. And I take all my grandchildren by there occasionally and let them look at it.
Is it still all one house? Or
it's still one little house on the hill. And it's been renovated. The house was turned and it was a stucco house. It had that fake stucco on the outside of the wood.
Yeah.
It's like, it looked like imitation brick. My grandmother called it imitation brick. But some people told me it's called stucco. Well, anyway, it's like, it was a 5-room house. And I take my grandchildren by there. And what they did when the city bought it, they did some work on the yard. They restructured the, they took the stucco off. They tore the house down to the foundation. And then they built it. What I mean when I say that is the wood. And then they replaced old wood. They basically kept the house. And then they renovated inside and made it modern. I'm very proud of the house. And I'm proud to be able to go by there. One time I asked someone, could I come in?
Is there someone
and I took my
from the city living there? Or is it
there's
a family.
There's a family living in it. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, the house was bought by the city and sold, because when they fixed it up, they fixed it so nice. It was one of the nicer small houses in the neighborhood on the street. It was sold within, I think, a couple of months. It was very nice. It's modern.
So it's still your old house.
I feel like it's still my
now.
House. I like to go by and look at it and show it to my grandchildren. Just riding by in the car, riding slowly, because I don't want to bother the people. But I think it's been sold several times, different people, over the years, because that's a lot of years. It's been sold several times.
Wow. Well, Carolyn, I guess we should go ahead and wrap this up here. But I just want to say that I really appreciate you spending the time to give us all this information.
I enjoyed it. It's like writing my story. In words.
Well, I'm going to sign off here. This is Sarah Lavender interviewing Carolyn Ann Johnson-Jones.